people ask me, or have asked me since we filmed that show, they're like, so how was filming the show? And of course, I'm like, oh, it was awesome. It was great. And I'm like, but one of the funniest things was watching Tom and Rich fish. They were geared up. They had one rod in their hand, the other rod in the belt. And the first bonefish you caught, I'd tell, okay, here we go. There's the bonefish coming. Tom puts his perfect cast way out in front of the school of bonefish. They're coming right into it. And here comes Rich, runs up, almost shoves him out of the way, casts over his line. Like, these two are competitive. You know, they're just all about catching the fish. And you do the same thing to him. It's like, all right, we're both firing in there. My name is Captain Nick Labate, and this is the Tom Rowland Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast today. Got a great one for you. I got to fish with a great young guide in Key West recently, actually on my birthday. Captain Nick Labate is a fantastic young guide. He guided me to a slam on my birthday, which I very much appreciated. And we were also filming it for an episode of Saltwater Experience. So that's coming out soon. And if you're coming from that episode of Saltwater Experience, as we are going to promote it on the television show and get new listeners over here, if you're coming from that, welcome. Glad to have you. And if this is your first podcast with us, I hope that you'll go back and explore the guest list that we have. For today, Nick Labate has an interesting story about how he moved down to Key West and got started. He's been guiding for 5 years and he's really done a great job. I hope you enjoy this episode with my new friend, Captain Nick Labate. So Nick, man, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Right on. So how's fishing been?
It's been really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, we're starting to come into our fall transition of things, the cooler water and, you know, fish are acting a little different, but everything's falling into play and it's been really, really good lately.
Yeah, it seems awesome. Like you guys have been catching a ton of bonefish.
Yep, lots of bonefish around. The last couple of days, that's all Craig wanted to do was bonefish. He's never caught one. So he shipped it on down and he got a real good taste for it. And we had a lot of fun doing that. And then we kind of challenged him a little bit more and had him chasing some permit down by the end of the week. And that got him hooked pretty good too. So.
Was he successful?
Oh, yeah.
And then you slammed?
Yep. And then we slammed yesterday, which just kind of worked out. The first couple days, we were just bonefish, like I was saying. And then the last day, I was like, well, we're just going to go fishing today.
Yeah.
Let's just see what happens. And stumbled into a big fat permit on the flats, and he ate the crab just like he was supposed to. And
nice.
Then kept pulling down that shoreline, and there was a couple little tarpon under the bushes, and he was hungry as could be. And then I'm like, all right, there's two. Let's go find a bonefish. And we've been on those all week, so it went and worked out pretty good.
Yeah, you knew if you've been on them all week. Usually that's the curse when you say, okay, well, there's two. Now we got to go get the last one.
Yes, exactly.
That's the curse.
Mm-hmm.
So the bone fishing in Key West, when we fished, I was very impressed.
Yeah.
Like with the bone fishing in Key West. What do you think happened?
Dude, the big picture-wise, bonefish?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've heard a lot about that. I've only been full-time down here for about 5 years, so I don't have any back-in-the-day stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard that the bone fishing, you know, used to be, you know, subpar, not good at all.
Not even subpar. It was a rarity for guides to catch them. I mean, it was almost always to the east, but there were a few bonefish to the to the west and kind of similar areas to where we saw them.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be one little tiny school and you'd have to be just right on the tide to get them. And very few people were catching them, but there just weren't very many.
Yeah. So when I, again, first started five years ago, I'd see a couple bonefish and I couldn't tell, you know, throughout the years if it was just me getting better at finding them or there was that many more bonefish around. And I think there was that many more bonefish because I'd be seeing them in places where I've spent a lot of time and never seen them before.
Right.
So I think we did just get a big push of the biomass of bonefish from wherever they came from, decided let's go south a little bit. And it's been really good. You know, there's plenty of bonefish out there. It's nice as a guide too, because they're a fish that's a little bit more rewarding to an angler, as opposed to like a permit, who can be pretty challenging, or even a tarpon sometimes. But you know, if you find some bonefish, you do the right things, they're going to come over and eat it for the most part. So,
man, that's interesting because that's changed too. Like in Isla Mirada, when in the heyday of the Isla Mirada bone fishing, there were a lot of bonefish around, a lot. And you would see them almost every flat you would go to, but they were incredibly hard to catch and they were incredibly huge. They would, I mean, that's where a lot of the world records came from. Yeah. And I think that we talked about it kind of on the day that we fished, but I've heard this from a number of people. Is that there was like a, you know, an unofficial 15-year, 20-year stocking program in Isla Mirada that you would have the fall bonefish tournaments, the spring bonefish tournaments, all these different bonefish tournaments, and they were wayfish tournaments. So you would, that people would go all the way to Biscayne Bay, they would go all the way to the Lower Keys, and they would bring the biggest, most dominant fish back to the same docks. So they're fishing out of either Worldwide Sportsman.
And then they'd release them there.
Yeah, and then they release them right there at downtown Isla Mirada. And then over the course of the years at Shell Key, you would go to Shell Key and there were just massive fish there. They were really hard to catch, but they were there all the time. And so some people kind of thought, well, it's a man-made stocking program right here in the ocean that you're just bringing these fish and releasing them here. And they go out there
and do their thing.
And that's where they stay. I don't know. It sounded like a good theory. I don't know what else would account for a small area like that, downtown Isla Mirada being basically anywhere that you can see Worldwide Sportsman from the water.
Why all the big ones are there.
And well, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know if that's really why they were there. It's kind of a nice theory.
Yeah.
And it does make some sense when you think about that. I mean, you've got the best anglers and the best guides in the Keys going after in a competitive environment, going out and catching these fish and bringing them back day after day after day, year after year after year.
Yeah. I'm sure
you would think a few of those would stick around.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know, but that's definitely not what happened in the Key West area with these bonefish. It's cool because you would take, now you've taken a fish that was not super common for everybody catching them. I mean, it almost seems like now you guys are catching bonefish kind of like we were catching barracudas back in the day. Like everybody's catching them. Like, it's just a fish
around. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
And so now you have this fish that was, you know, you had to really work for it. And now it's like a staple, like an everyday staple. That's pretty cool.
Oh, it's awesome is what it is. It is so cool.
And then the permit fishing has always been the best in Key West.
Yeah.
So, but there's been a change of that too. Like you're seeing a lot of really good permit fishing up in Biscayne Bay and even in Isla Mirada. They're catching a lot more permit, I think, now than they were. It all changes, cyclical.
Yeah.
Kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
Especially when it's cyclical on to the good side.
Yeah.
Like
now like we're hopefully the bonefish stick around and then, you know, 5 years from now, it's not like a drought comes through. Hopefully it's everybody stays strong.
Right. Yeah. So you've only been here for 5 years, but you started guiding. What's your story? How did you get here?
How did I get here? Well, it all started when I got a mating job in Boca Grande as a first mate. I grew up on the west coast of Florida, a small town called Inglewood. Grew up fishing and then went to school in Orlando. And I was driving to the east coast a lot, Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, when I was going to school up there. And that's kind of when I really got obsessed with sight fishing in the shallows. All I had was a kayak and I would bring that sucker there 3 days a week. I was there. And then I came went back home, Inglewood area, for Easter in April. And I had a buddy who was a mate for a tarpon guide. And he was like, hey, why don't you do this? And I was like, oh, well, that would be awesome. But you can't just go to the Yellow Pages and find a job as a first mate. So I scoured the internet and I found one posting of someone looking for a mate. And I sent a really nice email. And then I looked at the posting. It was from 4 years prior. I was like, oh, man. And I just said, not a chance. Went back to Orlando. And this guy messaged me back. He's like, how'd you know I needed a mate? I was like, well, I had no idea. And he's like, all right, well, I'll give you a shot. So quit my job. Packed everything in my car. Boom. South. Here's May. And I start working for this guy who really taught me everything I knew about live baiting for tarpon. And I just kind of brought that down here. And again, when I guess put my application in, I didn't know how good he was. Ed Walker is the guy's name. And
I know Ed.
Yeah, I worked for him for 3 years, and it was just absolutely incredible. Well, you know, just a ridiculous amount of knowledge working for him for a couple of years. And I moved down to Key West probably about 2 years after I was doing the Boca Grande thing. I had a buddy of mine who he bounces around a lot. And we were talking, and he says, "I think I'm going to go down to Key West." And I said, "Well, that's where I was thinking about going." He says, "Go ahead, man. Head on down. I'll meet you after tarpon season." And sure enough, end of June rolls around. I give him a call. I said, "Hey, I'm coming down to Key West. How are we looking?" He came down to find a place for us. And he says, "Well, I got a sailboat. It's over at this marina." And I'm thinking, oh gosh, what am I getting into here? But car was packed. Down I came, lived out of my car in a sailboat for a couple months, and found a place on the mainland of Key West. And here we are. And
wait, did you have a boat?
No, I didn't have a boat at all. No, I didn't have anything. I brought my kayak down with me. Uh-huh. Spent a lot of time kayaking around the Lower Keys, just exploring stuff like that. And it was different because we may have a lot of the same species in the Keys as we do where I grew up on the west coast of Florida, but they have a different mentality a little bit, you know, coming from like an estuary ecosystem to, I guess I would call this a coral reef ecosystem. Mm. I'm not sure of the term, but spent a lot of time on the water. And actually, for my first year, I spent most of it under the water. I just had to see what was going on down there.
Right,
so
on.
I would put on a mask and I would free dive all these channels and all these patch reefs and just kind of get a little understanding of what everybody was doing down there. Really was into the nighttime tarpon thing for a while when I moved down here. And this is all from a kayak or whatever I could do.
Around the bridges and stuff?
Yeah, bridges. Yeah. And I lived up the Keys a little bit, like Sugarloaf, Big Pine, spent a lot of time up there. And was ready. I was working again with Ed for a couple years, and that was just for tarpon season. And I had the fish bug. I'm like, I got to find a way to do this. And I was ready to be full time in Key West and quit lugging my stuff back and forth. Found a company down here to work for, Dreamcatchers. Steve yeah. Lamp.
No, Steve too.
Yep, gave him a shout, and same thing. He gave me a shot, and turned out to be an incredible opportunity. Learned. A lot about not necessarily the fishing aspect. That was just me having the time on the water, but the actual behind the scenes of what it takes to be a fishing guide. Worked for him for 4 years down here. Hmm. And it was awesome. Yeah, he puts on a great show, and decided, well, time to go all in. Let's see if I can do this thing. And all my little pennies out of the piggy bank and went and bought a flats boat. Here we are.
Yeah. So, when you're making that decision to go off on your own, mm-hmm. like what are the things that you're thinking about?
Honestly, I was just blinded by my obsession of the fishery. I really wasn't thinking of any of the financial responsibilities. All I thought about was, I really want to become more of a technical fishing guide, the tarpon, the permit, the bonefish. I felt like I needed to be in a flats boat, a poling skiff, to kind of do all that. And I said, well, this is the only way to do it, really, to do it right in your way and have a lot of time to explore and try new things. And, you know, the people will come if you give it a shot.
Yeah. So did you just stay full-time? Like, did you ever take on another job when in this transition period or anything like that?
No, I didn't. No, I went straight from one to the other.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And were there some tough moments?
Yeah. Of course.
I know. I know about those tough moments. And
yeah.
I always think about I lived on Ramrod, and it was tough, man. I mean, I had just gotten married and was not working as much as I needed to or wanted to. And there was time when my wife and I were talking, well, maybe, you know, maybe she get another job, like a waiter at night or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this moment, and I really think of it as like a real turning point in my career, where it's like, okay, I could do that. But if I do that, I'm not going to be on the water as much.
Yeah.
And that's not getting me, it may get my bills paid, but it's not getting me any closer to where I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this moment of saying, I just got to go for it. I got to do the opposite of what makes sense right now. What makes sense is to get a job as a waiter at night.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm going to do is I'm going to double down. And instead of doing that,
go
I'm going to go
in.
Fishing every single day.
Yep.
And just like you're talking about, like if you do that and you put in the time, then the people will come eventually.
Yeah.
And they did eventually. But there's some tough times, man.
Yeah. I mean,
there's some times when you're just like, man, there's more month than money and you got a boat payment.
Mm-hmm.
You got all of these things. So that's not an uncommon thing. But you feel like that paid off for you the same way?
Oh, yeah, extremely. Yeah, there was definitely a point in my life, just like you, where I'm sitting there, and I was still actually years and years ago. This is when I first had it kind of shower over me, so to speak. I'm out there I have work in the afternoon, but I'm going fishing on my kayak and all day, every day. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I'm actually doing something that I love that will hopefully pay off down the road. I'm not really sure that if it will or not, but time on the water, there's just no exception to
right.
that. I mean, that is the key ingredient, the sole key ingredient to becoming a successful fisherman or fishing guide. You can't buy it. It's just you have to put yourself out there, rain or shine, and you learn something new every day. I learn something new every single day. Even if I'm fishing the same water, same spots, you learn a lot. And mm-hmm. that's the only way to take it to the next level. And you can hold back a little bit and go get that second job and be comfortable, or like we did, just go all in and
yeah.
go for the best.
Well, I've seen it work both ways. But for me, that was a turning point. And it was a point in my mindset too of like, I'm all in. I'm burning the boats. There's no plan B. I'm going mm-hmm. for this. And if I don't make it, fine, I don't make it. But if I do make it, I know that I'm not helping myself to make it by getting a second job and not being on the water as much. So that was, I mean, but I've seen it happen the other way too, where somebody, you know, like my partner, Rich, he worked as a, he was working at Hawks K, you know, a long, long time ago as a waiter there. And then he got a job as a mate. And then like you, he decided, well, I think I've gone as far as I can go as a mate. And now I'm going to
mm-hmm.
get a skiff. And then he started guiding right out of Hawks K, just
yep.
same deal. So you recently also tried something else new. We were talking about tournament fishing
mm-hmm.
when we fished not too
yep.
long ago. And then didn't you fish in the Slam?
I did. Yep.
What was your experience like there? Was that your first tournament as a guide?
No, that was my second. The first tournament was last September, October, is a Sugarloaf Showdown.
Okay.
Yep. So that was my first one ever.
And then, but this is your first Redbone tournament,
yes.
Redbone event.
Yep.
So what was your experience? What are your two tournament experiences like? Because I like to talk to people about this, because tournament fishing and charter fishing and fun fishing are really very different.
Yeah.
So what was your experience
yeah.
like?
I kind of got I don't know, I wouldn't say the bug for it a little bit, but the respect of the tournament guys, or for the tournament guys. Like you said, it's a completely different mentality. You know, like you said, charter fishing or fun fishing, you're out there, have a good time, catch some fish, come tournament time, at least my mentality anyways, I'm coming for blood. I'm going whatever it takes. That was the kind of mentality that I had going into both those tournaments. Did a lot of pre-fishing. I would go out there and fish areas and just check on the fish, and I wouldn't fish them. You know, I'd slide in there. Okay, there they are. I'm going to pull out of here real quiet. Leave them alone. Go check the bonefish. Okay, there they are. I'm going to pull out of here. Leave them alone. And you do that for a couple of days before, you know, and just have all your tides down to a T, you know, where you need to be, when you need to be there. And
you got to do that while you're making sure an Isla Mirada guy's not looking at you in binoculars. And they're like, there they are. Oh, look, he's leaving. And there they are over there too.
Oh, gosh.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I really haven't noticed too much of that down here. All the guides are really respectful of each other, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, but you know, if you see something like that,
yeah.
you see it.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. But yeah, my tournament experiences were a lot of fun. The showdown was permit, bonefish, and barracudas, and you could get points for three of those species each day. More points for fly, which is pretty much most of those tournaments, and actually ended up winning it.
Nice,
yeah, first tournament ever. I was like, holy cow! I'm up against all these legends I grew up like drooling over, like seeing them on TV shows and stuff. I was like, this is so cool to even be a part of.
Yeah,
and that was neat. And then to fish the Redbone, which is, I've heard about this tournament from all the old school guys. You know, whether it would be Steve talking about it or you or whoever it is, like the Redbone. Oh yeah. Man. And to even, you know, be a part of it was really cool. And same thing, went out there and gave it everything we got. And I think we got second place. I was kind of a little bit confused about the rules. I was informed that you were supposed to go for the amount of slams and that would win. So we ended up with 2 2/3 slams. We got a bunch of bonefish, 3 permit, 2 tarpon. And we ended up in second place behind somebody who had 1 slam and more points. So for some reason, I don't know. I didn't really dig into it. But
that's interesting. The rules have changed in those things, and they pretty much change every year, depending on who.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was told to be aware of that.
That's one of the things that was a real lesson for me one time. The first tournament I ever entered, we thought we won. It was the Slam Superfly was the first tournament.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the first day.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And we had done well. And then we get to the scoreboard, and it's a very informal award ceremony for the first day. And they're like, okay, well, looks like Roland and Cardenas win. And so they hand the trophy. And then this other guy,
you had the legend, trophy in your hands
legend,
and everything.
Legendary guy, Tim Hoover, he's like, well, hold on. Now, the rules say that it's like this thing. There's some discrepancy in the rules. Like, he has more points, but we have more slams or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. And they take the trophy and hand it to him. But, I mean, it's
welcome to tournament,
it's pretty good
Tom.
To lose to. Yeah, it's pretty okay to lose to Tim Hoover and Jim Boker, who won so much. But
yeah,
that was welcome to tournament fishing. It's like, oh, wow. Like, you can catch more fish, but not win.
And every tournament has, you know, a little difference in the rules.
And that's where, as I started fishing more and more and more tournaments, it's like, look, I want to read the rules before I even decide that I want to be in this tournament. Because, like, there's the Marathon Bonefish Tournament, which is, they allow chumming.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are really good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, Albert Ponzoa, that guy is a master chum guy. And he'll outfish me 12-1. Literally.
Yeah.
12-1.
Yeah, that's something I feel if you can get really good at, you can just wreck shop.
Yeah. Well, there's only one tournament that it's allowed, and that's it.
Yeah.
And so, or there used to be. I don't know if there is still, that's the only tournament, but that used to be the only one. It's like, man, I'm that's not my game.
Yeah.
I'm not good at that. And I don't even think it's worth it for me to get into it. But that was kind of a poor attitude too in hindsight, because how would I have learned the most about it to go up there and be in the same conditions, leaving from the same dock against the best there are?
Yeah.
That's how you learn how to do it. So in hindsight, it's kind of a bad attitude that that's not the right thing. But reading the rules though, it's like when you read the rules in advance, now you know what your pre-fishing should be. Because if it's like, okay, I only need 1 slam and then I need to rack up the points, that's a lot different than saying it's the number of slams.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm going to catch a bonefish, a permit, and a tarpon, and then I'm going to go back and I'm going to catch a bonefish, a permit, and a tarpon.
Yep.
And I'm going to go back. What if you had to do it in order? Like,
oh,
if you
gosh.
Picked your order, that would throw a wrench into the plans. Like,
yeah, no kidding.
Okay, we're going to, now it's like calling all your shots on the pool table.
Babe Ruth pointing to the wall there while he's swinging.
yeah. But the rules are a really big deal, you know, and it really affects like how you pre-fish and who your desired angler is, like all of that stuff. Do you think you'll continue to fish in those?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I probably won't be fishing in the Slam anymore just because I have a little bad taste in my mouth about kind of not really taken first due to some complication that I didn't know about.
Yeah, but what if you know the rules next year and you go in there and you start to dominate?
I think it's going to keep changing. I think it's going to be one of those things because I specifically asked multiple people on the board multiple times and they told me the rules before all this. And then that's what I set out in my mind to do and then was informed because of something that. But yeah, the Sugarloaf Showdown, I'll fish that again. And there's a lot of really fun tournaments out there. Mm-hmm. There really are. The Cuda Bowl, I have never fished. That's in, I believe, February mm-hmm. for Barracudas, which is just good, clean fun. That'd be cool. I think I'm going to be able to fish the Del Brown this year, which in my mind is like the biggest tournament that you could possibly imagine or hope to win. Mm.
Yeah.
It's not one of those things where you, not that anyone is ever going to get lucky, but it's a permit fly fishing tournament. So if you're competing in that and you're winning that, you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way around it. And even those big tarpon fly tournaments, you guys have them pretty much all up your way. I don't even think Key West has a fly fishing tarpon tournament
Mm-mm.
that I'm aware of. But
a lot of them come down here to fish.
Yeah, they do. But yeah, no, I could definitely get into tournament fishing. I think it's a lot of fun and, you know, we'll just kind of play it by ear. Like, the Sugarloaf Showdown is at the end of this month and I was going to fish in again and something came up and, I've ended up just picking up some normal charter trips for it and I'm not really super, you know, butthurt about it. But,
right.
Some of those other tournaments like the Del Brown, that's all I'm going to think about all year.
Yeah. I remember when the Del Brown first got started. That was pretty cool. Cal Blumberg got that thing going, which was, it is a great event. I always wanted to get a permit all tackle going, just like they have the bonefish all tackle up in Isle of Mirada.
Mm-hmm.
So you can catch them on fly and you can catch them on bait and you can catch them on artificial and it's just for bonefish and you can get different points. And the idea is to, you know, kind of like a slam.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to do is kind of like a slam for permit. The slam would be if you caught one on bait, on fly, and on artificial.
Ooh.
So then, like, if you caught one on all three types of tackle, that's kind of...
a very well-rounded angler to be able to do that.
Until you get one on all three, it's purely for points. But then when you get all three, like you get the bait, you get the fly, you get the spin, or the artificial, then you're on a different level. And now you're competing for points again.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea would be, you know, make it harder. If you could get the one on the jig, that would probably, I mean, I almost think that it might be easier to catch one on fly than on jig some days.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
That was something I noticed earlier this week is mm-hmm. We were spin fishing all week.
Yeah.
And previous to that, we were fly fishing for them. So you're throwing a fly at a bonefish in the shallow water. You can, you know, put it right in front of them. Nice, soft presentation. They're going to come over and eat it. And we get out there, and for some reason, I didn't really think of it. I was like, oh, there's the bonefish, cast at it, and the jig plops, and they go scattering all over the place. You got to kind of rethink how you fish them a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But if you I like tournaments like that have that kind of strategy to it. Like if you're really going for the win, you could also ensure a loss because you're like, okay, we caught one on bait. Now we need to fly fish for them.
Exactly.
So now you fish all day on
all
day one. And maybe you catch the one early on bait and then maybe you fish all day for them and maybe you catch one on fly. Okay, so now you have two. But somebody else had a well full of crabs and they went out and they caught six. So they have 600 points and you have 200 points for fly and 100 points. You have 300 points.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really winning. But if you can get that jig fish the next day, then somebody could have 1,200 points.
And it won't matter.
Yeah. And you could.
Yep.
So there's all this strategy. And mm-hmm. it's like you could go out there and you're like, I don't think anybody's going to catch all three. So I'm just going to rack up the points. And then, but you could also do it to where if you just catch them on, if you just have one level of bait, no matter what that is, or one level of fish. Like if you catch bait fish, catch it on bait, or you catch it on fly, or you catch it on jig, then it's all still on points. But if you put two of those together, then you're on a second tier.
Yeah, I like the idea of the different tier.
Yeah, I think it's cool. You should put that tournament together. I'll come fish it with you. You do all the hard work, and I'll just show up and fish.
That would be fun, though.
But nobody's ever put together a permit tournament. I mean, other than the fly tournaments.
Other than the fly only. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah. The interesting concept, because if you have, you know, a permit angler, say he's a really good fly guy, most of them have, or a lot of them anyway, have never fed a crab to a permit.
Right.
Or even held a spinning rod.
Right.
I have some guys that, you know, will do the spin fly trip and it's windy or whatever. And I'm like, you know, why don't you just grab a crab? And they can't cast a spin rod at all. But you
go back to the fly.
Yeah, and you give them a fly rod and they're throwing farther with the fly rod than they can with the spin rod.
I've seen
rod.
That a lot of times.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, let's just get it over with. And they throw the crab right off the hook on the first cast. You're like, oh boy. And then the second cast, it goes behind them. And then the third cast, it's like, man, we're going to, seriously, I don't want to insult you, but this could possibly be the worst insult possible, is that we stand a better chance of catching one on fly than you throwing that live crab, because you're terrible.
it's what people have done, you know?
Right. And then the crab is something, you know, it's not like throwing a jig. Sometimes that crab kind of...
frisbees off, yeah, catches little bit, the breeze, sometimes, yeah.
You know, especially if you don't throw it real hard.
Yeah. But,
yeah, there aren't that many anglers that are... there aren't that many anglers that are just common, everyday, guided anglers that are good with fly, spin, and plug. But when you get into some of those tournaments, you'll see them, and they do exist, and they are there, like a Jim Boker or, you know, Dan Zakari or Troy Perez. Those guys, they can do it.
Get it done on of it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, they can get it done. Yeah. And you know, you'll see the same guys that are in the tarpon tournaments, and they'll win like an artificial tournament too, and they'll win. That's the guy. That's the one you want. He's the angler. So what is it that you're the most excited about as far as your fishing goes in Key West? And you're 5 years into it now.
Mm-hmm.
You're developing a pretty good clientele.
Yep.
A lot of good things are happening for you. What are the things that you're most excited for? Like if you kind of blue sky this next year coming up.
What am I excited for? Probably to just, build on the things I already know and just unlock new doors and new ways to do things and new places. Say, let's just take example, fly fishing for tarpon or whatever it is. Not something I did a lot of working for Steve on the bay boats. You know, it just never really happened. So I'm really kind of just, it's something that I don't have completely 100%. There is no questions asked. This is what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas, you know, something else, you know, maybe a little bit more confident in or whatever it is. But there's always, in my mind, the next fly, the next technique, the next way to fish, you know, something different. I mean, everyone's out there catching fish, but if you can kind of create a new challenge for your angler and just bring it to a whole nother level, I think that'd be something really cool. Just something new to this fishery. It's what brought me down here in the first place. I grew up doing the snook and redfish thing, and I thought about Key West. I was like, well, I don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. It's a very challenging fishery, and that's kind of what attracted me to it. You know, it's not something you can just walk out there and do. So to just, again, you know, take it to a completely whole new level, whether it be learn new fish on certain tides or certain spots. I want there to be no conditions that I can't go and find a fish, you know, whether it be blowing 20 out of the north, 20 out of the south, and overcast or not overcast. There is somewhere where you can go out there and do whatever you want to do, whether it be a permit or a bonefish or whatever it is. Like there's so much that goes on in this fishery that there's no way you could ever know about. I mean, let's say you have one island, and let's say you fished around that island 100 times. But whether it's fall, winter, summer, spring, there's going to be a different kind of fish around that island, whether it's going to be high tide, low tide, or everywhere in between, there's going to be different fish coming through that island. So to be able to be at that spot at every tide stage during every season, during every condition, and know what's going to happen. I mean, there's no other way to do it except for to get out there.
Right.
And like you heard me say earlier, you know, learn something new every day, try something new every day. and that you're going to ensure that you learn something new every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the biggest thing I look forward to is just exploration, discovery, bringing this bar of the fishery and finding a way to raise that bar. Is it possible? Yeah, it's possible. Is it going to be done? Sure. Someone's going to do it.
Well, each guide has their evolution as a guide, and there's like things that you learn that open a whole universe.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first saw my first laid up tarpon, and I was like, oh, I wonder if it's possible I could find like places where they do this regularly, and then it goes on this mad search
quest for laid up tarpon
all over. The next thing I know, I'm up in Hell's Bay and doing crazy things and finding you know all kinds of new spots and going out. And some days, once you unlock this secret, you're kind of like, oh, well, there's one and they should be over there. And then you run over there, they are there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you run over here and they are there too. And then you unlock this big thing, or maybe it's the bonefish, or maybe it's the permit, or the, you know, like I started doing this thing with the Goliath groupers under the mangroves, and that was so cool. And I was like, well, I wonder if I took somebody here, if they would think it was as cool as I did. And then they thought it was even cooler than I did. And I was like, well, that's something you could do on a cloudy day.
Oh yeah.
And so then I started running around every single island there is, you know, like, oh, they're there too.
Something under
they're
there,
there. They're here, there, you know, and you just get so excited about these things, and you have these evolutions of your guiding career. Because like, if you're just, I mean, for me, like if I was just fly fishing for tarpon, fly fishing for permit, and fly fishing for bonefish, I'm only taking that so far after 10 years or 12 years of doing that. You got the same clients.
Yep.
You're going and doing the same things. And it was when I had kids that things really changed for me, because I got a bay boat, first of all, and we brought the bay boats down here. And then taking my kids fishing, and they can't do a lot of the things that I'm doing with my clients on a regular basis. Like, they're not going to go out and sight cast permit. You know, they're 2 years old.
Yeah.
So we're going up against the mangroves, and the idea is to catch snappers, but all of a sudden somebody hooks into something that burns you under the bushes, takes all the line, breaks it off. And you're like, what was that? And so you take the kids back there a few more times. Doesn't happen. Then you go back there on your own on a day off or something. I'm going to figure out what
check
that
it
was.
Out. Yep.
And it's a big snook, or it's a redfish, or it's a, you know, giant Goliath groupers under there, or any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you unlock that little thing. And then there's these little doors that open up.
Endless world of stuff to learn and try and different ways to do things.
But I think that the guide has to keep his mind open a little bit and kind of open to those opportunities. Like we were talking before about, like, do you really want your clientele to be 100% fly?
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting question, because the fly guys pay well. They book way in advance. They really are avid. They're going to be practiced for the most part when they get on the boat. They're going to be good customers. They usually bring lunch. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They send you Christmas presents. Like, the fly guys they're the best customers.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they don't really want to come in January. So, like,
yeah, I don't know. It depends on the mentality. There's a lot of the fly guys that are the diehard driven, you know, I'm only here to catch big tarpon or permit or whatever. I have some fly guys that won't even cast at a bonefish. You know, it's like, I'm only here to try and catch the hardest thing possible, a permit. And it's not hard for me to go one way or the other. Like, when I was working for Steve, we didn't really know exactly what we were doing until the morning of. So someone shows up at the dock and they say, oh, I want to go catch sharks today, or I want to catch tarpon today. You're doing everything on the fly. You're learning it, and you just feed off, you know, your client for the day and feel out what they would really enjoy doing. Like, if you have someone that says, oh, all I want to do is catch a permit, and you go out there, some jacks swim by and he throws at a jack and catches a jack, and half the time they're like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, we're not going to go hunt the flats all day. Let's just go catch sharks and cudas and have fun and stuff like that. And the fly guys are really great. And me personally, it's not that I'm biased on, oh man, we're spin fishing today. I'd rather be fly fishing. personally, it really doesn't bother me one way or the other. It's more about you enjoying what you're doing. I really enjoy the technical aspect of fly fishing. I really do. It's challenging. And it's something, like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of doors to be unlocked. I don't really know about them. It's just that humanity doesn't know about them. Like there hasn't been, this fly hasn't been ever tied before, or this technique really hasn't been tried before. I'm sure somewhere it has and someone knows about it. But I think that's the cool part about the fly fishing is you're taking it to a whole nother level of difficulty and challenge. And it's really nice. On the other hand, it's nice to just throw out the anchor, put out some mullet or some pinfish, and all of a sudden there's monster tarpon jumping all over the place, and it's easy as could be. You don't have to pull into the wind or worry about, you know, your 11 o'clock shot for the client. It's just, yeah, throw out a bait, and there's a big tarpon. All right, sometimes. That's awesome.
Sometimes. But in order to get that mullet, you might have had to throw the cast net 50 times.
Yeah. I've actually never put out a mullet for a tarpon.
Really?
Never done it.
Dude, no. That's one of the greatest bites in all of fishing.
You could take I've heard a lot about it.
It really is.
Well, that's the thing you said about throwing the cast net. And another thing I learned working for Steve, and then as you can go pull up a pinfish trap, you drive right out there, pull
Super
up
easy.
A pinfish, you're fishing.
Super easy.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you're on that spot. 20 minutes after you leave the dock, you're not throwing a cast net, chasing mullet around, you know, having to have that security of a full live well before you go out there, because you don't even eat the pinfish. You can go catch them on artificials.
Right.
You know, don't stress about the bait that much unless it's something you're really confident about.
You got to try it.
And it tears them up, huh?
You got to try it. You got to figure out where the mullet are. Like if you can find them in a dock light or something at dark,
yeah,
and you can make that cast net throw, and you can have your mullet in the live well
one throw done.
Before light. And you go to one of these channels in the springtime when they're just going to be slow rolling in there, and you put a mullet out, you won't believe what happens.
Yeah.
They'll be doing backflips, and it's crazy. I mean, it's a good bite. Mm-hmm. It really is. And, you know, a lot of people that say, I'd rather catch, you know, one on fly than 10 on bait. It's like, I don't know. Have you ever seen them eat a mullet?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It really is. It's one of the best bites in all of fishing. I mean, tarpon obviously just hate mullet, and mullet hate to get eaten by tarpon. And it makes for a great, you know, on a slick, calm morning, man. It is. I remember taking my kids to a place right next to where we caught some bonefish. When I was fishing with you, and we went all the way around and came into that little spot, and it was dark, and I had mullet, and I had my kids there, and they were probably like, maybe like 5 and 3, or maybe 6 and 4, and we get there, I go up on the flat edge, pull up on the flat, come out, drop the anchor, lay back, sit the mullet out there. Oh, boom, 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 boom.
Bombs going off.
Oh, it was incredible. Both my kids, they still remember that. Like that was one of the best days ever, because it was like the coolest thing. And you could see the fish rolling, and you could see the mullet making a wake as they're going back there, and they go anywhere near those things and they just explode.
Yeah.
But it's a great bite. Not a lot of people fish with mullet here. For whatever reason.
Yeah, I just didn't need to. And I made such a science out of live baiting with pinfish. And every bait fish does something a little different. Like a pinfish, as soon as you hook it, his first instinct generally is to swim down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what he's going to do when he's drifting back. I mean, goes for every little different bait fish. So I don't know. I just never really branched out. But
you know what? When I found that I didn't have pinfish, I don't even know if I should say this on here, but do you know what a sergeant major is? Tarpon also like those. They have the stripes on them. They would be right at my dock, and I could catch the sergeant majors.
Oh, the pretty tropical
looking ones?
Yeah,
they're beautiful. Yeah, tarpon love them. they love them.
Yeah, I've caught tarpon on a lot of crazy things. I've caught them on toadfish.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
And you hook them just the same as a pinfish?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think they care much.
No.
I think if there's that profile going in front of them, no matter what it is, they're going to eat it.
It's such a great bite.
Yeah, before the
pinfish bite's a great bite, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
Yeah, before the regulations on the barracuda, I had a buddy catching them on baby barracudas.
Really?
Years ago, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They would probably eat them. Really good. Mm-hmm. You ever do a kite for the tarpon?
No, I've never done that. No.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. That's where you can get a mullet back there too. Like on a really windy day, you can you can do that. And there's a lot of different kinds of fishing.
Yeah.
Certainly. So after you had worked for Ed Walker for a little bit, did you do a little research on him and figure out who he was?
Yeah, it didn't take long. just, you know, hanging around the dock or, you know, other people who knew of him. I was like, yeah, I'm working for this guy. And they go, what? No way. I was like, yeah, is that good or something? Is that cool? They're like, he's the man. I was like, oh, great. And, I remember my first day mating, we slid, over by Boca Grande, and there's, you know, the 1,000 boats in the pass, and we just kept on driving it. And I've never even caught a big tarpon before this, never seen it. And he just strolls up in there. There's a big, huge happy pod all to ourselves, not a boat in sight. First bait in there. Oh, you know, we were using little thread fins or something like that. And I'm so nervous. I'm like hooking the bait and he's casting it the first two cast off. And he looks down at me. He's like, oh, this is how this is going to go. And finally, you know, get it in there, hook a tarpon, get it boat side. Massive, like 150 pounder. First one I've ever seen up close. And I was like, oh my gosh. He's like, yeah, just another day. And just that man just wrecked shop. It was really cool to watch. And I just kind of took what I learned up there and applied it down here. And not necessarily because the fishing styles were different. It's different down here in the Keys. And I think really what I learned a lot about working for him was the big picture, the big migration patterns, when to expect fish in certain places and what they do when no one else knows where they're at. You know, he knows where to go find them. And the same thing applies down here. When they're doing something funny or the moon phase is a certain way, you can kind of, you know, go and look for them or whatever it may be. And go out on a whim and just be confident and you'll find them. But it's definitely a different tarpon fishery down here. It's really cool because we have fish that come in so early. For example, the last couple of Februarys we have been ungodly amounts of tarpon in February. March gets real good. And they stay a little bit longer than up there, I think. I'm not really 100%. But I don't know. It's cool. It's really cool.
Then you got the little fish. Then you got the little tarpon that stay around all year. Do they have that kind of fishery up there?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they have a couple of, I'm sure, way up in the creeks. And what we have back home, when I say back home, like Inglewood, you know, west coast of Florida, is there's landlocked juvenile tarpon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they go way up in these little lakes and stuff, and they grow up. And I have a buddy of mine who, you know, goes in there with a, you know, little 5-weight, and you can find all these places where all the tarpon that we're catching now are growing up, you know, and that's kind of cool.
Can they get out of those? Like you say, they're landlocked, but...
So they follow like all the drainage pipes and stuff. I guess they're not landlocked. There's some sort of system for them to get out and stuff like that, but you're catching bass on one cast and a tarpon with the other.
Yeah, that's super cool.
So that's cool. And I'm sure they have some of the normal, you know, juvenile tarpon and stuff like that, but I would say, you know, the Keys and the Everglades have a lot of fish.
Did you see that tournament recently that was the Poonfecta, and it was all about catching the super micro baby ones?
I did see that. Yep.
Yeah, it looked cool.
Yep.
It looked like a great, cool format.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a neat concept.
Have you ever gone up in the Everglades and caught those?
The micros?
I mean, they're like
There's a spot here in the Lower Keys where you can do that, you know, real cold day or whatever. You go sneak up through the mangroves, and there's a little spot that has these baby tarpons. And you know where I saw a lot of those? When I was fishing Mosquito Lagoon. You have to take these little side roads out in the middle of nowhere, and there's these little drainage ditches off the side that have a ton of little baby tarpon. And when I was working for Ed, we did the Moat Marine did a tarpon genetic recapture study program for 4 years. 1 year, actually, we had more samples in just the 2 months we fished than anyone else all year long on the Gulf Coast. But there was a guy on the east coast of Florida who had the most tarpon samples, and that's where he was. He was up in there, and he was just catching tons of the little babies. And as to whether it's a 150-pounder or a half a pounder, it still counts as a tarpon sample.
Right.
But yeah, they learned a lot about just, you know, their whole little lifestyle and how they grow up and
Wonder if they ever recap. It'd be cool if they ever recapture one of those little tiny ones somewhere.
Yeah, that's just something crazy to think about when you're staring at these little guys. Like, are they going to be coming through the lineup on the ocean side 30 years from now?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I saw that one in a ditch somewhere 15 years ago or whatever.
I kind of think, and I don't know this, I need to talk to a scientist about it, but it seems like they would grow kind of quickly to about 10 pounds and then slow down, but I don't know if they do, because it just seems like if they keep that real slow growth, they're just so ready to be eaten by another fish.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then you see the little ones like we have underneath the mangroves that are, you know, 25 to 36 inches long. Seems like those are very young fish. But I don't know. I kind of think maybe they might grow to that size in a couple of years and then maybe then slow down after that.
I don't know the science behind that. I know they have a really long larval stage.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I'm not sure their growth rate.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah. We'll have to do that on another podcast with the tarpon scientists. Well, that's cool. So did you ever watch the movie with Ed Walker and Billy Pate?
I don't think so. I didn't know about this.
No, he's in the most classic fly fishing film of all time. Like, Billy Pate did two tarpon films, and he's in the second one, I think, all about fishing Homosassa. And
that's cool. I know he spent a lot of time up there.
First time I ever met him, he's like, yeah, Ed Walker. And I was like Ed Walker, like from the Billy Pate movies? And he's like, yeah.
And I was I didn't even know that.
No kidding, man.
See, this guy I used to work for gets cooler and cooler every day.
He's a cool dude, man. He's a cool dude. And then as soon as the hurricane hit where I met Ed, we were both down helping Scott Walker to clean up his house. So like in a time of need, you know, Ed packed it up and came down. Mm-hmm. He has a house that he goes to on Big Pine, I guess. And so he was interested in that. But I mean, dude, I saw it. Ed Walker, he puts on the gloves and gets to work. Mm-hmm. You know, when it's time to work, he did it. And I just thought he was super cool. We spent a weekend cleaning up Walker's house and Duck Key. You know, not just Walker's house, but we were going around to all the different houses that Scott Walker's like the mayor of Duck Key and the unofficial mayor of Duck Key, allegedly. Yeah. And so everybody was like, oh, if you're there, because we came by boat. We took a boat to the Keys way before the roads were open. And everybody's like, well, can you go get all the food out of our refrigerators and make sure the roof's not leaking? And so we went in basically a lot of people's houses down there and cleaned out their refrigerators and stuff. But Ed's a good dude, man. Mm-hmm. And he really knows a lot about fishing. That's cool that you have that kind of experience, because I find that the more places that I fish and the more people that I fish with, the more knowledge you can bring back to your home water and it applies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, you got to have an open mind. There's a lot of different ways to do things and piece together everyone's little tricks and stuff and create your own way to do it. It's pretty cool.
What about other places? Do you go fish anywhere else around the world?
I had my first ever destination fly fishing trip. Went to Baja, Mexico with the boys to go try and get a rooster fish. Could finally afford to go on a vacation and try and do that. And that was my first time out of the country, actually. And it was really cool. We were basically running up and down the beach on ATVs until you see the fish. You know, they'd be cruising or whatever they're doing, and then get out and throw at them. It was pretty cool. I didn't get one, and I am completely okay with it.
Yeah,
I just have the mentality nowadays where I just want to experience the fishery.
Mm-hmm.
I could really care less if I catch a fish. And honestly, to tell you the truth, this is going to sound really weird coming from a fisherman, but I really don't enjoy reeling fish in that much. It doesn't really do anything for me. I'll do one big tarpon a year. Whenever I'm out on the boat fishing, there's always someone with me who would enjoy it a lot more than I would. And I really like putting people on fish. But anyways, back to the rooster fish. Yeah, it was really cool. They were cruising up and down the beach. I remember the first time I saw one, I was like, I'm staring at a rooster fish. This is wild. But probably got, you know, a couple follows a day. But it was different. It wasn't like something like a tarpon who you can kind of talk into feeding, or like a permit where you have to be super stealthy and accurate, and then that's going to be rewarding. These rooster fish we were throwing at, it was kind of more of like a numbers game and just finding a fish with the right attitude. There was this one point where there was this pair of fish in the surf. They were, you know, right where the waves were crashing. You can hit them with the end of your rod tip, running down the beach. And me and a buddy would take turns kind of, you know, bunny hopping along. He'd get some cast, chase him until he's out of breath. I'd run up ahead. And we'd chase these pair of fish down the beach for hundreds of yards. And then finally, after the 30th cast in their face, one came over and ate a fly. It was just weird. It was just different to have.
It's pretty physical fishing. 30 casts, hopscotch all the way down there.
Oh, yeah. You're getting after it. My feet were shredded by the end of the week.
I bet. It's running in soft sand as fast as you can.
Yeah.
I did that in Christmas Island for the giant trevally.
Oh, you did the similar story. The GT thing over there?
Yeah. I was fishing with Moana, and he put us out there, and I was like, I can go get that fish. And I ran down and I'd throw to it, and then he just kept going, and I ran down and did that, but I was by myself with two people. That's a great idea, you know, because then you get more casts. But man, I didn't get mine either, but I thought the thing was going to take my leg off. I mean, it came past the fly and kept coming
at
me
you.
And that's a big fish, and they're very aggressive looking. But I didn't hook that one. I thought I was going to. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
One of the highlights of my whole fishing career, I think. Because I turn around and look at the boat after that thing kind of charged at me, and I look at the boat, and it's a little speck back there. I'm like,
oh,
dang,
gosh,
man, if that thing took my leg off, I don't even think I could
And you're out there in the middle of nowhere.
Man, yeah. Yeah. That's a cool place if you ever want to go. Yeah, I like doing the destination trips too. Mm-hmm. I don't get to do
as
much.
I could get into that. Yeah. I have a buddy having a bachelor party in Louisiana in January.
Oh, you should definitely go there.
So I'm going to fly in a day early and fish, and just, again, I could care less how many fish I catch. I just want to check out the fishery and, you know, hear, I've heard a lot about it. So it'll be cool to do the redfish thing.
If you go to Louisiana in January, you're probably going to catch a lot.
Yeah.
It can be very good up there in the wintertime. The fall is probably the best, but are you going to Venice?
Yeah, so we're staying in Venice. Yep.
That's where the bachelor party is going to be.
Yeah, yeah. It's 2 days, and we're fishing both days, so I don't think there'll be much partying involved. But
that sounds dangerous. But Venice is such an incredible place to fish. God, it's so awesome.
So that'll be cool. I could totally get into the traveling and checking out new places and different fisheries.
Yeah, well, you're in a perfect position to do it. You know, as a young fishing guide, I did that a number of times and got to go all over the place. Australia, Christmas Island, the Bahamas, where else did we go? Alaska a couple times. And you just talk to your clients. You got the whole year. And you're probably going to have one of these lodge owners come across your bow, and you can talk to them about it and be like, look, if I bring, how many people would I need to bring to come for free? And that's basically how it goes. And so, I mean, there have been those deals out there to where, you know, if you bring 5, you come for free. If you bring 10, then you earn that what one person would cost. So you go for free and you get paid, you know, whatever that person, that extra person, say it's $3,000 for a week. So you come home with $3,000. That's pretty good. But you got to round up 12 people or 10 people or whatever. And, but you're in a perfect position to do it because you can talk to your people all year long, talk to them about this trip you're going to take to the Amazon or to Australia or to Alaska or whatever. And they start signing up.
Yeah.
And then you go for free.
Yeah, I've never even thought of that.
No, it's a good deal.
That's cool.
It's a hosted trip, you know, and that can be, you know, just try it with one in an easy place for the first time. And then after a while, you know, you have 2 trips a year, you know, a fall trip and a spring trip or a winter trip and a fall trip or something like that. But you're in a perfect spot to do it. And you can go and travel and do that really easily. Pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Australia was probably my favorite trip.
You have done Australia. What were you chasing after down there?
That place is like the Keys, that there are a ton of species. I think we counted up at the end. I think we caught 52 different species of fish
in
a week.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's incredible. So Australia is kind of like the United States upside down, and there's this peninsula that goes off kind of the northeast corner, mm-hmm. kind of if you look at it like that. And that peninsula is kind of like Florida, and this area is called the Bay of Carpentaria. And so you go up into that Carpentaria Peninsula like that, and as you start going north, it starts to look more and more like Florida going south. Like from Cairns up there, Cairns would be kind of like North Florida, maybe, or maybe Orlando, mm-hmm. kind of. And as you start going north, you're going closer to the equator, and you start seeing
tropical.
You start seeing very, very similar plants. Like you might see something that looks almost identical to a hibiscus or to, you know, to all the different kind of palm trees that we have. And then mm-hmm. you know, as you're getting closer and closer to your destination, it's looking more and more like Keys or South Florida, at least deep South Florida. Mm-hmm. And we got on a mothership and went all the way up to the very top. And then there were all these river mouths that were coming out. So very similar to the Everglades, where you got like the Shark River coming out up there. And so you would stay right there and you could go offshore first thing in the morning because the wind would usually pick up. Mm. And they had these fish that were like, they called them Spanish mackerel, but they were really kind of more like a wahoo. They were really good to eat. And so we could catch those in the morning. They had some tuna species out there. They had cobia. Cobia was the only thing that was exactly like our cobia. I mean, that was the same species.
Mm-hmm.
Like I couldn't tell any discernible difference between that. But there were a bunch of fish that were similar to our fish. Like
I noticed that in Baja, I was snorkeling and there was something that looked almost exactly like a yellowtail snapper,
uh-huh.
but it was just a little bit different. Off. Yeah, a little different.
Be interesting to eat that fish and see what they taste like.
Yeah,
if it was the same on the plate. But like the main species that we were going after, I went down there to catch permit because at the time, not many people.
What species of permit would that be called?
Indo-Pacific.
Indo-Pacific.
Yeah, at the time, not many people had done both. You know, caught a permit around here and the Indo-Pacific permit. So I wanted to try to do that. And I went down there and caught two or three of them. They're not as hard to catch as our permit. They're not at all. Or I hit a great day.
Yeah.
And so once I had caught two or three, I was like, well, it seems like I don't think I want to spend my whole trip doing this.
Yeah, let's see what else is going on.
Yeah, let's see what else is going on. And this was before 9/11. So I took a huge amount of rods and reels down there. I had mm-hmm. spin, plug, and fly. I had so much gear, so much flies, so much jigs, everything. And then we caught queenfish. We ended up catching some world record queenfish. That was a great fish. It was kind of like a combination between a tarpon and a jack crevalle almost. And
perfect.
They look like a leather jack here. Do you know what a leather jack is?
Yep, I've seen the queenfish.
They have that one spine that kind of goes a little bit forward.
Yeah.
Well, our leather jackets are like this big, but the queenfish are like this. And they're
big guys.
But they bite. Oh, they
aggressive.
So they're
perfect.
The jack crevalle part is that they eat
mm-hmm.
a lot of different things. Surface, down low, jigs, whatever. You can catch them on all different kinds of stuff. Then they jump out of the water, which is kind of like the tarpon, but they just love to eat. That was fun. But then they have a barramundi, which is like kind of like closest would be to our snook.
Mm-hmm.
They have an oxeye herring, which looks exactly like a baby tarpon like this. But when you throw into a school of them, they're like jack crevalles. You can catch 15, 20 of them before the school spooks. If the school ever does spook.
Like, wow, perfect.
Crazy. Super
fun. So you
think
that's just an unpressured fishery? Is that why? There's no pressure.
But I don't. I think that the fish are similar. But you know how like you get in a school of jacks or whatever, and the more you catch, the more excited they are, and the more you can catch. Where mm-hmm. you get in a school of permit, you catch one, and they're all like, "Ooh, mm-hmm. Something's wrong." And they're very similar fish, but one is just like, man, action means there's something to eat.
Something going on.
Like, yeah, so we need to go check that out.
Yeah.
And you can just keep catching them. And then there's another fish that's just not in their nature. They're just like, no, this is not good at all. And I'm out of here. And so, I don't know. There were just a lot of those fish down there that just seemed like they were just in that, they had the nature of wanting to check it out. So you could just keep catching them one after another. They had those threadfin salmon, which kind of look like a carp, and they got their eyes kind of low, and they've got these catfish kind of whiskers cool fish, man. Cool fish. There were so many different fish down there. And we would catch, we went out to the reef where we really racked up on the species and we're just dropping jigs down there. And every time we dropped down there, we catch something different. And like here, it was similar. Like, you know, like that kind of looks like a gray snapper. And that kind of looks like a yellowtail. That kind of looks like, you know, I don't know what this thing looks like. It's this is totally new. And then we caught a cobia, which was exactly the same. But that of all the fish we caught, that one was the only one that was exactly the same. Like when you pick up the permit, you're like, oh, it looks a little different. Like it's got a different nose on it and it's got a little different coloring and it's got shorter fins and, you know, it's close. Mm-hmm. It looks a lot like a permit, but slightly different, you know. But you could do that, man. You could go and they have some amazing trips down there on those motherships. The guy that I did it with is no longer doing it, but I think there's a company called Nomad that does some just wild stuff where they do some of that stuff and they go out to the Great Barrier Reef.
So when I think of Australia fishing on that side there you were talking about, isn't that where the big marlin come in shallow flats?
Well, I don't know about the flats. I've heard about people doing that. We didn't see anything like that. And we were also, when I see those people fishing for those and releasing them on the flats and stuff like that, we were absolutely told not to go anywhere close to the water and don't wade anywhere because they're giant crocodiles where we were.
That's spooky. I have heard that. I heard they do get you.
They didn't get me because they said don't wade and I said, okay,
no problem.
I'm not going to. I do not want to get eaten by a giant crocodile.
I took a guy fishing who was from Northern Australia, I guess is where all the bad stuff is. He said everything up there is trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Whether it's a snake or a spider or a crocodile.
It's so great that we stayed on this boat because we didn't. I mean, we touched land a couple times, but not much. I mean, there was a big crocodile, dead crocodile, up on one of these sandbars we went by, and it was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, huge, huge. Yeah, so we didn't get in there. But I don't know where they do that on the flats. I think that might be a little closer to the barrier reef, but I don't know. That looks super cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool places in this world to check out.
I know.
I'm trying to decide what's next. I don't know.
Me too.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so I know that when people listen to this, they're also going to watch the show. What did you think about shooting the show?
I thought it was awesome. I remember when you first messaged me on Instagram, it was, I guess someone was talking about us doing a podcast and you kind of messaged me and we talked about that a little bit. I think it was a month or so later, you said, hey, we're coming down to film for a couple of days. I'd love to do a flats show. And I was like, wow, that is so cool. I've been watching you and Rich fish together since I was a little kid. You know, it was like always my favorite fishing show to watch on TV. And to actually be a part of it was incredible. It was so cool.
Had you ever done a TV show before?
No.
Did you have any idea what it took to make one?
No, I probably still don't know everything that takes.
I don't know. It's like a slow moving ship and it's really difficult to turn. And I would think that on the way that we did it is probably about the most nimble and smallest crew that we ever go with. But
I've done some photo shoots and stuff like that with companies and I've been involved with the, you know, step by step and what it takes to get the shots and stuff like that. So I was, you know, knew what I was getting into there.
Yeah,
it was different.
I didn't. When I started the TV show, we came straight from the competitive tournament world where we would stop someplace, look with binoculars real fast and be back on, maybe not even turn the engine off and then back up on plane and looking for something else to this other world of, it's exactly the opposite with the television show. And sometimes over the years, people have been critical that we don't catch enough fish on the show. And I'm like, man, dude, if you knew what we had to do, you'd be surprised we catch anything. I am. I'm surprised we catch anything because, like, you know, you had everything all wired. Like, compliments to you. You really had our plan dialed in and you were going to fish here and then here and then here. And you wanted to be in all three of those places in about 15 minutes so you could hit the same tide window. And I'm hearing you talk and I'm like, no way. He's going to be disappointed when he sees how this goes. Because it's like, okay, we got to go. And
your crew did a great job too. You know, there wasn't really ever a point where I was like worried about, you know, them. They did their job. You know, we just went fishing. There was a couple times where, all right, you know, let's set up for a second and take our time and make sure the cameras are rolling. But everyone did a good job. It didn't really get in my way that much.
Yeah. Now it's a little bit easier, honestly, with bonefish, permit, or tarpon, because we don't catch as many as like if you're trying to catch redfish or something like that, mm-hmm. and you can catch a lot of them, or the school might be moving and you might need to catch one to kind of understand where they're. That drives those guys crazy, because if they're away, and we had to learn this the hard way, if they can't make a good shot, you might as well have not even caught it.
Yeah.
But then we're trying to communicate to them that sometimes we know that and we have to catch this fish so that we can keep the school right here,
yeah.
or that we can kind of understand what they're doing, or even know if they're going to bite or yeah. whatever. And it just drives them completely crazy.
Yeah, because I'm sure they're on the same, just as much as you want to catch the fish, they want to catch that shot.
Yeah, that's all. They're only there for that. And yeah. so sometimes they might think that we're only doing that because we want to have fun, but we're all yeah. working, you know? Like, it's like, you know, we've already had fun. Now we're all out here to try to film a TV show. I yeah. know that. But
yeah,
sometimes we got to move fast. And yeah. sometimes we got to catch a fish. And, you know, it's a slow moving ship though, compared to like a charter, or when you're out there with your buddies, you're like, no fish here, let's go. And now it's like, well, hold on, we got to okay, put up
gotta,
all this camera.
We
got
to land the drone. It's out there flying somewhere.
yeah.
And I'm like,
oh. Runaway drone.
yeah. Jason's like, over there scouting for fish. I'm like, we need to be somewhere in 10 minutes.
yeah. Like, if I had known this, we would have kept pulling.
Yeah.
But you did a great job on that. And it was fun. It was my birthday, and I had decided that we were going to catch a slam right away, and you were on the same page.
Oh, yeah.
So,
whenever possible, that's what I like to try and do, unless someone has their mind fixed on you know, I'm only here to catch big tarpon or something. If, mm-hmm. given the opportunity, you know, it's
so
nice
do you
to do.
Tell people that in the beginning? Like,
no.
I think we should try to slam.
No, I don't do that. Unless they come to me and they see I've been getting a lot of slams, and they really want one, and they say, oh, you know, it'd be cool to, you know, try and do a slam. I'm like, oh, great. You know, so you know what we're going to do. You've heard about it, read about it. We're not going to sit here and bang on all the baby tarpon. We're going to get one and get out, and which is cool. But no, I don't
that's
go into
good,
a charter
though.
Saying
that's
that.
The best thing is that communication with the angler, knowing that
mm-hmm.
like when you get there and there's 20 baby tarpon rolling around,
mm-hmm.
we're not going to stay here until they're all gone.
Yeah.
Like,
And
are
honestly,
you okay
I think in the,
with catching and leaving?
As a fishing guy down here in the Keys, I think that is so important. If you're out there all day, every day, you can't bang up on these fish, whether it's a tarpon or a school of bonefish. Like, yeah, there's some days if that's like the only thing you have going and you have to go back there for like 2 or 3 days in a row, it's fine. But you can't do that. These fish, they're educated. There's some groups of baby tarpon that you can pull in from 100 yards out and they're still not going to bite because they've been getting beat up 3 times a day. And then you go come down off plane and the tarpon come out from under the bushes to look at you and they'll eat a sock. It's just a different fish, and you just can't beat up on them like that. It's better to get one and get out and go find some more stuff anyway.
It is, but on the other hand, if you sit there and mess with those fish all day, you're not messing with others.
Yeah. yeah, okay.
well, I mean, that's just
no,
like...
No, you're right.
You know, I think of it the same way. I mean, I don't like to beat up on those fish, and it hurts to watch it or to be in a tournament situation to where you have to. Like, you know you've overstayed your welcome.
Yeah.
But you have to stay there because all you need is one more tarpon and mm-hmm. you only have an hour left in the tournament.
Yeah.
And you've overstayed your welcome and maybe you can pull this off and maybe you can't, but you know you're putting undue
yeah.
pressure
I think
on these things.
Tournament is no holds. I mean, you're going for it. You're going to destroy them. You yeah. just, this is what you're there to do. Like, that's the whole reason you lay off them the other 90% of the time.
Right.
Is for... you know, that situation where you have to get it done, you know, and that's fine. And then after that, you know, in your head, okay, I'm not going to fish them for a couple weeks now. You know, thank you. I appreciate you giving me that one more tarpon that gave me my win, and I will not fish you for a while.
mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the balance. It's
yeah.
a delicate balance.
Yeah. But the slam thing's a lot of fun. I really like it because it gives the angler a chance to do try out the different fisheries. You know, it's sight fishing. A permit is different from sight fishing a bonefish, which is different from catching a tarpon and keeping it on the line even, you know, and you're running around a lot. You're trying a bunch of different things. I don't know. It's the ultimate. It is. I mean, there's the highest point you can accomplish as an angler is I think a Florida Keys Grand Slam tarpon permit bonefish. It's the most challenging thing you can do.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's the most challenging thing you can do as a guide.
Yeah, it is very difficult. You know, I mean, if say for example, you have the guy who shows up at the dock and says, "I want to slam today," or just like you said, "Okay, I want to slam when I come down on my trip," or whatever it is.
Well, I was okay with it because I was ready to tell the story of what a slam is on the television show. Like, it's great if we have success. If we are successful in getting a slam, that's going to make a great TV show. But if we're unsuccessful in getting a slam, I was ready to tell that story too of why are we unsuccessful in getting the slam? Because we just ran out of time or because we
something
couldn't find
happened,
one.
Yeah.
And it would make for an interesting story. And so I was already ready for that. So
yeah.
But I was like, okay, if I get the shot, I'm going to make it happen. I thought, but I didn't do so good on a couple of them.
You got it done, man. It's all that matters.
I got it done, but I could have gotten it done earlier. That one on the edge of Northwest Channel.
He freaking had the crab in his mouth three different times.
Yeah, but I
it was
could
like
see it
halfway
poking out.
I've never seen one do it
quite like that before.
And that was funny because that was our first, you know, we got the tarpon, we got the bonefish, and we're like, okay, you know, here we're looking for some permit. And we pulled for a minute.
Right.
And you're like, oh, there's one. And you throw it in there and he goes over and what looks like eats the crab. I'm like, there's no way they're going to make it this easy for us.
Well, he did eat it.
He did. Yeah, he did.
But he ate it and he had it like a dog with a bone just in between his lips and was going away. And I was like, well, maybe the crab slid up the line and the hook's in there. And so I'm waiting for him to
get it down.
I figure that he's either going to swim around right in front of the boat and kind of go out like that. And I'm just going to watch him go, you know, and spit it, you know? And so I'm like, I got to do something. Like he's had it for like 30 seconds, but I could see it.
Yeah.
I knew.
Yeah, that was a funny transaction.
Well,
permit
and Rich's
critters.
Line got all wrapped around there.
You know what, Tom? So people ask me or have asked me since we filmed that show, they're like, so how was filming the show? And of course, I'm like, oh, it was awesome. It was great. And I'm like, but one of the funniest things was watching Tom and Rich fish. They were geared up. They had one rod in their hand, the other rod in the belt. And the first bonefish you caught, I'd tell, okay, here we go. There's the bonefish coming. Tom puts his perfect cast way out in front of the school of bonefish. They're coming right into it. And here comes Rich, runs up, almost shoves him out of the way, casts over his line. Like, these two are competitive. You know, they're just all about catching the fish. And you would do the same thing to him. It's like, all right, we're both firing in there.
Kinda. I mean, well, yes, we have that. We got that way on the redfish, the tournament redfish, where we were fishing.
Well, you could tell you two have
redfish tournaments.
We fished a lot together.
Yeah, but not enough because he got my line. He got his line all caught around right when the permit ate that crab. I'm like, did you have to throw it at that fish? Because this we could be done like now.
Yeah.
It could be over.
Yeah.
And anyway, but yeah, no, it's a, you know, we have the difficulty of filming a show also means that as an angler on that show, you got to make happen whatever opportunities you get.
Yeah.
Because there aren't going to be that many. I mean, basically, whatever you would normally have on a regular day, now you have two boats going down, you're going to have you have hatches slamming and sandwiches being eaten behind you and you've got, you know, everything is going on. Drones overhead, all kinds of weird stuff that you don't normally have. And so when you get shot, you really need to
make
it happen.
You need it. Yeah, you
really
you
need to make it happen because you might not get another one.
Yep.
Even if the fishing's great.
Yeah.
Because then once we catch that fish, as you saw, now we're going to release it. Now, okay, let's do another net thing. Okay, you were down there. Let's stand up and shake hands again.
Yeah.
And it's all this. Now let's talk about the fish
Let's talk about it.
Now we've drifted off into nowhere and now we're still talking about the fish and the waves are coming up and it's just a funny kind of thing, but it's a slow moving ship.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad as you make it sound.
Yeah, well, the end of the blue one is even slower moving. Yeah, because everything's got to get battened down because you're offshore. Everything could get wet very easily. So now everything has to be buttoned up just perfectly. And once it gets buttoned up just perfectly, it is more difficult to get out, obviously. But yeah, it was good. It was great. You did a great job. And
yeah, I appreciate it.
You're a great
guest.
So this will go out before the show comes out, but then we'll push it out to when the show comes out. And that'll probably be one of the first ones out on Discovery Channel this year.
Yeah, that was so much fun, Tom. I couldn't thank you again for having me, man.
We'll do it again. So how does everybody follow Tailing Water Expeditions? Is that that's your company, right?
Yep. I really do a lot of Instagram stuff, honestly. It's just so...
In black and white.
Yeah.
What's your deal with black and white?
I like it. Yeah, no. I started that. I think there's just a couple reasons subconsciously, like why I wanted to do that. A lot was because I have so many other fishing people following me. I just didn't want them picking out spots and backgrounds, and makes it a little bit harder for people to catch on. And also, I mean, it's on the story. In the story, I do the black and white. And I don't know. It's just, I feel like that should just be a little teaser of, you know, what's actually going on out there.
I like it. I like it in black
and
white.
It's just habit now. And I don't know, just a constant variable to just, everything's going to be in black and white. And I don't know. I don't know why I started doing that.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It really is. Now, one of the young kids that works for me, he's got his whole phone in grayscale because he says that it's not as addictive. His whole phone, everything's in black and white. So he just scrolls by everybody's story and it's in black and white. So yours doesn't stand out.
Doesn't matter.
On his phone. I'm like, hey, did you see that? It's in black and white. He's like, everything's in black and white.
Yeah.
But that's pretty cool what you do. So you're on Instagram. What's the handle?
Cap Nick Labate, C-A-P-T, Nick Labate. Or you could search Tailing Water Expeditions and find me on there.
Yeah. You got anything else going on? YouTube?
Yeah. I have a Facebook page and I have a YouTube channel, but I really don't do too much on there. I do try and throw out some videos. I'll usually do maybe, you know, one really nice one a year and then some little teaser clips and stuff here and there. That's pretty much about it. It's a full-time job in itself with the social media. I try and keep it as simple as I can to, you know, get some stuff out there and let everyone see what's going on. But, I mean, you're out there for, 10, 12 hours a day sometimes, and you get home and then I rush, I take a shower, and then I got to sit there and send clients the pictures, and then I got to put together the Instagram story or the post, and so that's enough.
Wow. Yeah,
it's
no kidding.
It's a lot that goes into it.
It is a lot that goes into it. So do you take pictures with just your phone, or do you take the big camera out there?
No, I take the big camera out there. Yeah, I definitely do that. I have a couple lenses, and I went over budget and bought a drone.
Oh, you did?
A couple weeks ago.
Oh, I think I saw that on your story.
Yeah, so I'm starting to play around with that. That's a lot of fun.
God, you're going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
Quick.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. That's an amazing piece of technology that I certainly didn't have when I was guiding.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. All right, Nick. Well, thanks for doing it. Thanks for doing the show. It's cool to learn a little more about you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. All right. Follow him in black and white. All right. See ya.